Hello and welcome to the No More Tech Podcast, a show where we'll try to answer your technology questions. I'm Devendra Hardawar, and you might know me from Engadget or the Slash Filmcast podcast. This show's going to be a little different. I won't be reviewing anything really, or even following the news cycle. Instead, I wanted to focus on questions I'm getting from readers and people on Twitter and things like that. And for me, this is kind of coming full circle. I actually got my start in tech as a sales associate in high school, working at Office Max, that defunct office supply store. And I think I was really inspired by watching tech TV. And also when I first started, it was called ZDTV. That's also where I first discovered Leo Laporte and Patrick Norton, all those folks who are still doing great tech content these days on the Twit network. They really inspired me to go out there, help people understand their tech, because it's really confusing and it's honestly kind of scary. And I continued that in college. I also worked in our computer lab, and I ran around campus and just helped people in their dorm rooms, which was a pretty eye-opening experience. It taught me a lot about understanding bedside manner when it comes to helping people. There are many situations where I had to save someone's final paper or research project or something like that, and some instances where I couldn't. So that's all, you know, kind of goes into how do you help people with tech. After that, I also worked in the IT department at my college for 4 years as I was trying to break it into tech writing full time. Overall, I have 8 years of IT support behind me, which honestly has been very helpful as a technology writer, too. Just to have the idea of, you know, coming from the perspective of where a user is coming from and trying to see things in their eyes, something that's easy to understand for a techie may not be for a normal person. So yeah, this podcast is kind of going back to the heart of what I've always wanted to do. And honestly, it seems like there's a little room in the tech podcast space, just because there's so many shows about people just talking about the news. I want to answer your questions and maybe relive my Fraser Crane fantasies or something. I also plan to bring on some guests down the line and also record some calls with people and their questions to really step them through troubleshooting processes and things like that. For now, I'm going to start with some questions people have already sent in. Thank you so much for doing that. If you want to send in one of your own, just head to nomoretech.net. and follow the link to the forum there, or you can email us at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com. And if you really want to get fancy, you can record your question and send it over email or just share a link through the web form. If you're going to do that and don't have a dedicated microphone, honestly, just use your smartphone and pop up any memo recording app. You'll have much better microphones there than with a webcam or something on your computer. Now let's get things started. One reason I really wanted to rush and get this show up and running this week was because I got a lot of questions about Black Friday, and honestly, it seemed like a good time to step in and just tell people to chill out a little. My main Black Friday advice is that you don't need to go out and buy everything. You'll find some good deals, for sure, but mostly I'd recommend picking maybe one or two things that you really want to keep an eye on, especially big upgrades. This is a good time to look for TVs and computers and things you really need and want, or something you just kind of want to give out as a gift. But I'd really recommend against jumping on every single deal you see, especially if you don't need that particular product. You'll see these low prices again eventually, and honestly, it probably pays to wait, especially if it's something that could be upgraded in half a year or when you'll actually need it. There are definitely some great deals this year if you're looking for a new TV or need a big computer upgrade. I really like the Vizio P-Series, and there's some great deals there this year. The 55-inch, which is probably going to be good for most apartments, is down to $650 at Best Buy from $800. And also the P-Series Quantum, which is their highest-end TV at 65 inches, is $1,500, down from $2,100 at Best Buy and Target. And if you haven't heard, Vizio has been making great TVs for the past few years now. They've also invested quite a lot in full array backlighting, which means that the backlight of the actual screen is spread throughout the display. A lot of manufacturers just put the lights along the edges, which means things look pretty uneven. And Samsung has been doing that for a while now and has really held their TVs back, in my opinion. Both Vizio and TCL have done a decent job of upping that. That's really the feature you'd want in an LCD screen at this point, especially if you can't afford to bump up to an OLED TV yet. It's still going to look very good with that technology. And when it comes to OLED, there's some deals once again. I think every Black Friday, LG's OLEDs come down in price quite a bit. Right now, you can get this year's C8, which is their step up from their entry-level model, for around $1,700 at Amazon. And that's a pretty good deal. That's normally around $2,200. That's not too far from what I paid for my LG B6 back in 2016, which was the entry-level model back then. I've been incredibly happy with that TV, and also glad to see that the price just shot right back up as soon as I bought it, too. So if you're in the market for a TV, honestly, Black Friday is the best time to be doing that. It's really the big purchases like these that Black Friday prices are best suited for, it seems. On the lower end of the spectrum, there are also quite a few deals from TCL, and they've been making great TVs for, honestly, many years now. First as an OEM, and now as a brand of their own. This year, you'll be able to get one of their 55-inch 4K smart TVs from last year for $350. I believe that's down from around $380 normally. That's a good deal if you need a secondary TV. It has HDR. It'll probably be a decent primary TV, too. I just really recommend against going too cheap for your main TV, just because you don't really buy these things very often. That Vizio 55-inch is twice as much, but it's honestly going to be a much better TV. And also Vizio has an M-series, their mid-range line, 55-inch for $550, which is also going to be much better looking than that TCL. If you have room for a 65-inch TV, then the TCL 6-series is also a great deal this year at $900. And also there's another Vizio P-series at that size for $900 as well. Between the two, that's a really tough decision. In general, I'll lean towards Vizio. I like their technology. I like what they've done with their TVs in general. But TCL is also very good. So really, this is a super tough decision. I'm going to talk a little bit more about TV technology in a bit. But first, I want to look at a couple other Black Friday deals. I'm a big fan of Microsoft's Surface Pro lineup. I think they've done a good job of marrying tablet functionality with a laptop PC in something that's, you know, really fast, really portable. They've had a rocky start, but honestly, they've gotten a lot better over the years. And Best Buy has a great deal for Black Friday. They have last year's Surface Pro, so that's technically the Surface Pro 5, for $600 with the keyboard case, which is normally, you know, another $120. It's not a great processor, and it's only 120 gigabytes, but honestly, that's a good price for that machine in general. And if you have a Costco membership, they have a great deal for the Core i5 Surface Pro 6 for $800 with the pen and the type cover. And I believe that's typically over $1,100, so that's a pretty sweet deal. And when it comes to Apple, we're not quite sure what they're going to be doing yet, but they did announce they're going to have 4 days of sales starting on Black Friday, so you can probably find some decent discounts there. I'm also really interested in the deal for the 2018 iPad, 32 gigabytes for $250. That's going to be at Target and Walmart. That's a really great tablet. And honestly, I don't really recommend Android tablets these days unless you want something disposable for your kids. And when it comes to that, it's really Amazon's Fire HD tablets that have been doing the best, just because they're always affordable. Those will all have some slight discounts this year. The Fire 7 Kids Edition tablet will be $70. It's normally $100, so pretty decent deal. Amazon also includes a pretty strong case for those kids' tablets, and they also have a 2-year warranty where if it breaks, no matter really what happens, they'll just replace it, and that's a great deal for parents. If you're looking for more Black Friday deals, honestly, just keep an eye on Wirecutter. I just love everything they're doing when it comes to product reviews and deals aggregation. We'll also be highlighting some of their best deals at Engadget. And if you really just want to go hardcore, against my advice and against all common sense, keep an eye on slickdeals.net. They're my normal go-to deal site. They have a great app, too, that you can set up alerts and stuff for. So just super useful if you want a particular product and you just want it to, you know, wait and see when it's going to be on sale. Moving on to the rest of the questions, I got a lot about TVs, and I guess this is a really good time for people to be upgrading. That's something I've been arguing for the past few years. I've written about that on Engadget. So let me just read this one from Alex. He says, I have an older non-4K television, and I'm looking to upgrade at some point. Do I grab a 4K HDR TV now, or should I wait a year for something even better? Anything cool on the horizon? So to Alex and everyone else wondering about getting a new TV, yes, now is exactly the time to be upgrading, especially if you're still running a 1080p HD set or even something older. It took a while for 4K to get going, but I think with the addition of high dynamic range and just generally cheaper sets and better overall technology, it's a really compelling upgrade at this point. And HDR might sound like a buzzword, but it actually makes a huge difference in terms of what these new TVs look like. It allows for brighter bright levels and darker dark levels. It's hard to describe, but if you actually go to a store and just check it out, you'll notice that in a dark scene, like in a cave or something, or in a night scene, you'll just make out more detail in characters' faces and clothes. And for bright levels, it really just makes it all seem more realistic. So shots of the sun or maybe a bright light in a room, your eyes will respond to them almost as if you were watching something like that in the real world. They're just so much brighter, and it's just localized as well. And I think that's the main thing. On an older TV, something bright like the sun and the sky would tend to blow out the scene and also lose details around that particular object. So if it was the sun, you would lose details around the clouds and other things like that. With HDR, you just get more brightness from that object, but also you get to see the clouds around that. So it is sort of like looking up the sky in the real world. Once you see this technology in action, done properly too, then you'll really notice how different it is from where we were coming with standard dynamic range. I didn't like some of the early HDR demos I saw when I was at CES. Sony and a lot of TV vendors would run these really hyper-realistic HDR demos with motion smoothing technology, and it all looked really bad. But since then, I think they've calmed down, and they're doing better demos now that don't include motion smoothing, so you really get to see what HDR looks like. One of my favorite examples is just looking at Daredevil on Netflix. In the first episode, there's a scene where Matt Murdock walks into his apartment, which is really dark, and there's those neon lights outside, and the lights are just so bright, you know, and it's looking through his window. But meanwhile, the room is still itself pretty dark, but you can still make out what's happening in there. It's just that sort of contrast between light and dark. That's something we really haven't been able to have before HDR. There's also a fight in the rain at night in that first episode of Daredevil that I like to show off, just because the interplay of light and darkness looks so good. Most of these new TVs also feature a wide color gamut, which is pretty self-explanatory. It just opens up more colors to the screen. It's something that typically professionals had access to before on specialized monitors, but now TV screens and computer monitors are getting that as well. Basically allows for more realistic colors, and it's a really just nice thing to have along with the added contrast of HDR. Really, when buying a new TV, the biggest question is determining which technology you want your screen to have. I'm a huge proponent of OLED, which is just so much sharper and has better contrast and dark levels than LCD technology, which is what all the other screens offer today. Even Samsung's QLED technology, that's still basically LCD, LED technology. It just has quantum dots attached to it. They really wanted to have a different name there. And those TVs do look good. I think the brightness of LED TVs is generally better than OLED. But brightness only goes so far, right? You can't always be looking at a super bright 2000 nit screen all day. For me, the brightness of OLED is more than enough. And what I really like is just those black levels. OLED does something that plasma TVs used to do like a decade ago. They just get you really dark, inky blacks, and that really helps the overall contrast. It makes colors pop. It makes everything on the screen just look a little better as well, which is something I really appreciate. And even though LCD TVs have gotten a lot better over the years, especially those from Vizio that I was talking about and TCL, I'm still not a huge fan of their off-axis viewing. Basically, that's referring to what the screen looks like when you're not just sitting directly in front of it on your couch, maybe if you have some side chairs or something like that, or a very big living room. LCDs, even the best ones, even something like Sony's X900 series, which my parents just got, they look incredible when you're sitting right in front of them. But you go off to the side a little and the black levels disappear and the color accuracy is way off. And then things just start to look really weird. I was visiting my parents in Georgia and I just instantly missed the sharpness. I missed like the accuracy of OLED from pretty much any angle as I was sitting and watching Mission Impossible Blu-rays with them. And of course, the big downside with OLED is the cost right now. Like OLED TV, even on sale, is so much more expensive than a decent LCD at this point. Even though sale prices are kind of crazy, the 55-inch OLEDs are going to be going for around $1,700 during Black Friday, but you can get a decent 65-inch LCD for $900, you know? So it's really a big judgment call there. Like I said, investing more in your main TV probably makes more sense. And OLED technology is great. It's not going to be changing much over the next few years. Meanwhile, technically LCDs, you know, it's a dying technology. We're kind of moving away from that and either towards OLED screens or micro LED, which is an offshoot of LCD technology that kind of has a lot of the benefits of OLED. It's getting very confusing. I wrote up some of that in Engadget, and both Samsung and LG showed that off this year. You won't be able to buy micro LED screens anytime soon, but that's going to be the way TV makers move beyond 65 inches as their main size. Micro LEDs will be able to go beyond 80 inches easily. Both Samsung and LG are showing off screens around 150 inches, which basically takes over your wall. I believe Samsung's is called the wall. And that just gets us to like a Back to the Future type of reality or something. I'm a huge fan of giant screens, and hopefully that'll be something we'll actually be able to see at some point. For now, if you want something like that, you'll have to look at a projector, and to stay affordable, you won't be getting 4K anytime soon. I'm a huge fan of projectors, though, so I'll definitely be talking more about them in future episodes. And when it comes to TVs, Ryan is wondering what I recommend for movies and video games. Like I said, OLED, all the way, no question. Ben Pearson's also looking forward to upgrading to a 4K TV, but he sends in this question. I just heard for the first time that sometimes companies will manufacture certain models specifically to meet Black Friday demand, and sometimes those cheaper models are also subpar in terms of quality. Any advice on the best way to avoid falling prey to one of those raw deals? I haven't heard about this too much, honestly, but there are definitely plenty of bad TV deals out there. If you just see something that says 4K smart TV without much specs, if it seems cheaper than it should be, especially if it's coming from Best Buy or one of their brands like Insignia, you know, just be careful. There are a lot of TV brands I won't trust. Sharp is making a lot of low-budget TVs. In general, I'd say just don't jump on a TV if you see an incredible deal for it. Definitely research, look it up, even if it's from a known company like LG or Samsung. They have so many models that you probably won't want. Some of them may not have as many HDMI connections as you need. Maybe their HDR isn't fully up to par. So basically, do your research and stick with a model that you'll actually trust. I also really like TVs from Wirecutter and from CNET, so definitely just prepare before you run off and buy something. Now, once you're set up with your new 4K HDR TV, you want to make sure you're looking at it in the best way possible. David Viramontes asks, how does 4K HDR content that's streamed on Netflix compare to similar content from 4K UHD Blu-ray discs? As always, I'd say the Blu-ray discs just look better. They have a much higher bitrate than you'll ever see from streaming video. The big thing, though, is that the difference between the two is definitely starting to diminish. Compression is getting better. I think services like Netflix and even iTunes and other streaming services are getting better about spitting out 4K content. And, you know, I do buy a lot of 4K Blu-rays, but I typically only buy the ones for movies I genuinely love. You know, something I'll be watching several times a year. And for other stuff, I'll either rent it on iTunes or even buy it on iTunes if it's on sale. For indie movies, especially if they have a lot of special features, I tend to lean towards buying them on iTunes just to get those extras. So there's a lot of different choices there. They'll look good. I think that's the main thing. Make sure whatever version of the movie you're looking at has HDR. Make sure you're not just looking at an HD version of the movie. Some services, I think Amazon's the biggest culprit here. It's really hard to tell if you're watching the HD or the 4K version of a movie. Just pay attention to all those little labels. My big gripe with Amazon is that they have, for some reason, they list all their shows as both HD versions and UHD versions, which is not a easy difference to spot. And also, it doesn't really make sense. Why would you make the HD version of something available to somebody with a 4K TV? Get with it, Amazon. Just be sure once you're watching an Amazon show, you're watching the right version of that thing. And finally, another TV setup question. Matt Goldberg asks, should I route my receiver connection through my TV's ARC HDMI input if all my devices already have their own HDMI connection on the receiver? And first off, it wouldn't hurt if you do that, but the ARC connection, which stands for Audio Return Channel, that's really meant to push audio from your TV into your receiver. Before, the way you did that was with either a coaxial digital cable or an optical cable, and you would take that from your TV and plug that into your receiver. Now, HDMI can just kind of handle audio both ways, and that's a super useful thing. Just make sure it's configured properly. If you don't actually watch normal channels from your TV or use any of those built-in apps, it actually doesn't matter if you plug in the ARC cable, but it just makes life a lot easier. You just have to make sure both your TV and receiver support that technology and you're using the correct inputs. They'll usually have ARC written next to them in tiny print, or check your manual. Now for some quick hits. These are questions I think I could just knock out pretty easily. David Roach asks, can you recommend a website containing unique gift suggestions for my geeky wife who claims to have everything she needs? So I think every geek knows what ThinkGeek is because they have a lot of apparel and stuff like that. But there are many specialized sites out there that sell t-shirts and toys and other things like that. I really enjoy Fangamer. They produce a lot of unique branded content around games like Katamari Damacy and Persona and Stardew Valley. They tend to have a lot of great content, and they also typically work with the game producers to make it official too. So I really enjoy their products, and they often throw in nice things along with your order, usually like a quick hand-drawn thing. Masood asks, who would win in a fight between the virtual assistants from Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple? I think, obviously, Amazon's, the A word, which I won't say directly here, wins because they have the most friends. And that's really the key. All that third-party integration is really what makes it such a powerful platform. Siri probably has the most money behind it. And I would say Cortana is just trying to make friends with everybody because they're so desperate to be liked. Sean Trenery asks, thoughts on the AirPods 2 and features you'd most want to see? I was actually pretty disappointed Apple didn't announce a new set of AirPods this year, just because I'm actually getting more interested in picking them up. And it's been, what, 2 years now? And it just seems like we're due for an upgrade. In terms of things I'd like to see, maybe better fit. The reason it's taken me so long to even be interested in them is because they don't really fit well in my ears. But I've also just seen, I think, some third-party companies make these little slips you could put on, just like a normal earbud, and that helps them sit in better. So I think that would work better for me. Battery life needs to be improved. I'm also not a fan of how open the sound is. So yeah, maybe those earbuds would seal it in better. Yeah, long shot is that it would be really nice to see noise canceling, but we're not going to see those in a truly wireless headphone for a long time, just because that technology requires extra microphones, and it also eats up battery life. If you really want noise canceling, look at a pair of cans. I'm a huge fan of the Sony 1000 XM3s right now, but they also have the slightly cheaper Heron 2s. Get those refurbished. I picked some up for like $150. They're a great deal and perfect for flights. So I have a bunch of other questions, but I think I'm going to save those for the next episode, especially since I think they get into some pretty deeper concepts around technology and computers in general. You can send me more questions at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com or use the forum at nomoretech.net. Our music is by my friend Mallory Johns, aka Malix, on SoundCloud. Check out her music there. Let me know, you know, how you think the show's going, things you'd like to see, and definitely send your questions my way. I'm Devendra Hardwar, logging off.